Welcome to the Euro Digital Partners Insights Podcast. I'm Sean Patterson. I'm happily joined by another Thunderbird graduate, Stacy Abella of ExxonMobil. Stacy was at Thunderbird School of Global Management when I was, in the 2004 to 2006 timeframe, and joins us today from Texas. Stacy, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Pleased to be here.
Stacy, I'll ask the same question that I ask all T-Birds, and this is for those listeners interested in business school programs. What took you to Thunderbird?
Everyone has their story, don't they?
Yeah.
Mine starts, like some others, when I was a kid, actually. So I was going out for the cross-country team when I was in seventh grade, and the nurse was making small talk with me when she was doing the physical, and she asked me what I was interested in, and I told her that I loved languages and traveling. I wanted to go into international business. So she suggested that Thunderbird was the place to go for international business, and so I started looking into it. So later on, a few years later, when I was after undergrad, I went into a territory sales manager role in the corporate world, and then also spent a couple of years doing business development work in the Peace Corps in Nicaragua. And then after that, I made that intention to go to Thunderbird a reality.
Wait, so wait a second. How old were you?
I was in seventh grade.
Wow. So that's what, 13?
Probably something like that. Yeah. Actually, I have just been this March, I was in a board meeting and with a number of Thunderbirds, and we were talking later on about how we got involved in Thunderbird and how we learned about it. And it was actually quite a few people that learned during childhood about it, and they just set the attention and there they were.
That's remarkable. Well, I must imagine that the world is quite different from back then. I can't imagining at 13 that, you know, I'd want to do an MBA in international management, but you made that decision early on. I wonder what has changed for you as the economy, the current pandemic, it's changed business in a fundamental way, no, in the last 15 years since you were at Thunderbird. Do we need to rethink the way we look at MBAs, international management degrees?
Absolutely. And I am pleased to say that Thunderbird has done that. So over the past couple of years, Thunderbird has really taken a look at their program. And they do continue to offer some of the flagship classes like we took, like the global leadership, cross-cultural communications, and negotiations. But in addition to that, they've been able to leverage the scope and scale of Arizona State University to meet the growing demand that we have for customization in degree programs. So now they're actually offering, in addition to those flagship courses, customized programs. There's about 20 different concentrations that they're offering, and they're ranging from analytics, digital marketing, international law, public affairs. So they're able to leverage that scope and scale of the school. And in addition to that, another thing that they're offering is a built-in consulting lab, which is about half of the semester long. And it's typically done with its teams of about 4 to 6 students, and oftentimes also includes an overseas trip to actually see the client that they're working with and work with them. And so that's another great opportunity to have that practical experience for students. In addition to that, Thunderbird also continues to offer their 4+1 programs, which is where they're pairing that international degree with another technical degree like engineering, because it still continues to be very important for people in those types of technical fields that they know how to work with international teams, and also that they certainly develop those global mindsets that are needed in order to be successful in today's world.
Yeah, no doubt technical skills are always welcome. What's your direct involvement with Thunderbird today?
So I serve on the Thunderbird Alumni Board, as called the TGAN, the Thunderbird Global Alumni Network. And as an alumni board, what we do is we provide input to the school on their programs and their initiatives from an employer perspective. We also offer a lot of support to the students through things like webinars. We give mock interviews. We help them make connections from an employment perspective, and we offer mentoring. In addition to that, another thing that we do is that we help plan alumni reunions around the world. So the most recent one that we had was last September in Tokyo. There were about 500 of us who attended, and it was hosted by the Tokyo Alumni Chapter. And it included a business forum, a black tie evening event, and cultural tours.
Wow, so a pretty active alumni network, it sounds like.
Absolutely.
So tell me about the school today. Is it still attracting international students?
Yes, I'm pleased to say that the students of today still continue to be enriched by that experience and interaction. So the Masters of Global Management program is about 40% international, and there are students from about 55 different countries that are enrolled in the program.
You know, I think for many of the alumni, we were a bit disappointed with the decision to close the campus in the Phoenix suburb of Glendale. And for those who weren't aware, the school, the American Institute for Foreign Trade, was founded by Lieutenant General Barton Kyle Yount, a U.S. Army Air Forces officer who purchased the former Thunderbird Field from the War Assets Administration for $1, subject to the condition that the property be used for educational purposes for a minimum of 10 years. I'm wondering, what is and what has been the mission of the school, and can the school meet that mission during the pandemic?
So certainly the Glendale campus was quite a legacy. However, as you know, higher education has gone through a significant amount of disruption, and even more so in this COVID-19 situation. So the operating costs of the school and maintaining the campus and the World War II era buildings was getting to be quite cumbersome, combined with that declining enrollment that they were experiencing. So what happened is that they had to pivot. You know, as innovators, oftentimes even we don't like change, but that was the change that needed to happen. Being 30 miles away from ASU and all that it had to offer was challenging to be able to really offer those, like the customized degrees, like I mentioned earlier, for example. The school has preserved everything that wasn't nailed down, and even some of the things that were, and we've incorporated that into the architecture of the new building. So for example, one of the things also that I like a lot that the architects have innovated on is that they're designing the building such that the sunlight will actually cast the hologram of the symbol of the Thunderbird across the vestibule of the building. So I'm really excited for the future associated with the school. Thunderbird students talk about and alumni as well talk about the Thunderbird mystique, which is essentially a global connection and mindset that the people within the Thunderbird community share. And I think in a divided and fractured world like the one that we live in, building bridges is important today as it was when the school was founded after World War II. Another thing to mention as well is that, you know, though travel has changed a lot over the past several months, the world of technology has opened up an opportunity to really reach people around the world in new ways. And so that's an opportunity I see for Thunderbird. You know, Thunderbird and ASU on the whole have been quite effective at transitioning to online. In fact, I learned recently that ASU is actually the fifth largest Zoom user in the world. And in fact, Zoom is building an R&D center in right there in Phoenix as a result.
Ah, okay. Very interesting. And certainly an interesting design cue for the newly architected campus. I'm wondering, you must talk to a lot of alumni. What's your sense in speaking with those alumni? Do they feel that the best years of Thunderbird are behind us or in front of us?
So some alumni do feel that way, but really Thunderbird's visionary new dean that has come on the scene a couple years ago, Dr. Sanjeev Kagram, has really helped to set a new vision for Thunderbird. And under the ASU umbrella, what we're seeing is that Thunderbird is now able to expand its reach much more than we were able to do in the past. For example, last year I had the opportunity to meet Dr. Lindy Elkins, who is the director of the Arizona State University School of Earth and Space Exploration. So talk about a mindset that's out of this world, working with her.
Sure.
So we're able as a school to partner with her and to be able to put on some dual programs in under that program, as well as some other really great partnerships that we're doing with the medical college, law, analytics, public affairs, marketing, finance, as I mentioned earlier.
Well, it sounds like that program could fly like a Thunderbird, for example.
Absolutely.
Now, I want to transition to Industry 4.0, because beginning last year, Thunderbird started posting articles on their site about Industry 4.0, and I'll post some links in the show notes for anyone interested. Stacey, for listeners who may not have heard of Industry 4.0, what is it, and what is Thunderbird's Fourth Industrial Revolution Initiative and Globalization 4.0 initiative?
So the Fourth Industrial Revolution is all about the next tranche of innovation that will move us forward into the future in a sustainable way. So one example of how Thunderbird is really moving in that direction is the hub strategy that we've put in place. And that involves having a physical presence around the world to be able to engage with alumni in different locations, to be able to provide in-depth learning experiences for students through the consulting labs that I mentioned earlier, and also to be able to draw expertise from people around the world who are actually living in those locations. So the school is investing in those hubs and also reinventing the curriculums, making them innovative and interactive and customized, and also developing the students and alumni through their continuing education programs to make sure that we're future ready for a future that essentially is already here.
Yeah, that's interesting. And trends are really accelerating in industry, it seems to me. In just a few months, it feels like we've had to innovate for years ahead. I'm wondering, what is your biggest concern as somebody involved in innovation? Are you ever concerned that we're innovating too quickly?
Well, certainly, I think if anyone is waiting for us to go back to normal or the way that it was before, they could be waiting for a very long time. So yeah. To me, my biggest concern is that we don't lose the human side of technology. So technology has accelerated, as you said, by leaps and bounds. But meanwhile, we as humans haven't gotten an upgrade for thousands of years, right? So we need to really make sure that we're infusing ethics into our artificial intelligence and also putting in safeguards around cybersecurity so that we can keep pace with those technology advances that we're seeing.
What are the keywords or buzzwords to look out for in the coming years?
So I expect that buzzwords like skill sets of the future and upskilling the workforce will be increasingly important in the future. So we're entering an age when many of the tasks that we used to do can now be done by technology. And that should free up a lot of time for us. So my hope is that this next chapter in our civilization will bring unprecedented levels of human creativity and people reaching self-actualization, but we'll need the right skills, those analytical skills, and a growth mindset to be able to help us to get there.
Yes, I think analytical skills are highly undervalued.
Absolutely.
Maybe critical thinking skills as well, come to think of it.
Yes.
Yeah, you're working at ExxonMobil, and I'm wondering, what's your involvement there? I gather something in innovation.
Yeah, so I'm the Digital Innovation Strategy Manager for Corporate Financial Services, and that's a global organization that's dedicated to anything from accounting for transactions to invoicing and paying customers to rolling up the financial results for our SEC 10-K filings. So historically, in corporate finance departments, what we have seen in general in the industry is that the monthly and quarterly grind of the financial close was centered around, you know, getting the results materially correct for our financials. However, now, through big data analytics, there's a tremendous opportunity for finance departments to be able to, you know, enable actionable, real-time, and data-driven decision-making, in addition to meeting those requirements for financial statement integrity. So digital and innovation and building those kind of capabilities, being agile and adaptable within the organization, those are key to that strategy.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I'm wondering, it seems like with innovation, you really need to bring in the best and brightest minds. And I was having a conversation this morning with somebody who works in innovation for a large global travel brand. And the person was telling me how they didn't feel like they were getting challenged at work anymore. And I'm wondering, how do you keep your most innovative employees, your most brilliant minds motivated? Because I'm also thinking about Silicon Valley. Notably, it's something they've really struggled with in the Valley, and companies that have attracted great talent have had a heck of a time retaining that talent. What advice do you have?
Yeah, so what we've been focused on in my department has been around identifying those who have an innovative mindset, those who are curious and passionate and eager to learn, and connecting them with the right opportunities to develop their skill set and removing roadblocks that to allow them to experiment and to test ideas, but while also rolling out quick wins that can help to build momentum. In the corporate environment, we call these innovators that we've identified intrapreneurs. And this, what this does is it allows people to be innovative, but while also enjoying the stability of a salary, which can resonate with people based upon their personal risk tolerance.
Oh, absolutely. Sure. I'm wondering, what advice do you have for business leaders who are trying to build that innovative intrapreneur team from scratch?
Yeah, so as a corporation, we're rolling out a new leadership framework, and that involves putting front and center a few key themes. So one is around creating clarity. And so how that has played out in our innovation team is it's been very important to align up front on what success looks like and how it can be measured. And then another area is around promoting innovation. So one of the things we found is that in order to create clarity, it's important to establish what the innovation team is responsible for. So there's a couple of options, right? Incubating innovation means originating ourselves within our team, or enabling it. So harnessing the ingenuity of the organization to give the ideas wings, right, that they have within the organization. So
sure.
There can be pros and cons to both approaches. So sometimes incubating them, the ideas externally could lead to more breakthrough ideas, perhaps, but also then enabling ideas that are within the organization can help adopt them faster because those ideas came from them to begin with and they already have their buy-in. So that's an example there. Another area that is a key theme for us is around inspiring and motivating. So that's really the most gratifying part of my role because I get to see people accomplishing things that they never imagined that they could. And then that's achieved by giving them the right tools, the right connections, and the right support.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, what sets ExxonMobil apart from other companies in terms of innovation? Is it down to that enablement, or is there something else?
Yeah. So I would say part of it is going to be the scope and scale of the company. So the company includes upstream, downstream, and chemical, which is essentially means going from the discovery of the resource to refining and producing it into products that are then sold in the marketplace. And so having the scope and scale has allowed collaboration end-to-end over the full value chain, which is, you know, a way that other companies could only simulate, you know, if they didn't actually have that full value chain in their portfolio. In addition to that, there's recognition within the company that it's just not feasible to both innovate and operate at the same time. So having dedicated resources specific to areas like research and development, planning, and digital innovation that we can apply those ideas then across the spectrum has really been a game changer for us. And certainly we've seen that as we built the digital innovation team in corporate financial services.
Well, I'm thinking innovation probably plays a pretty sizable role in the long-term strategy of ExxonMobil. Do you think the company's more focused on the fuel of the future or creating greater efficiencies with existing fossil fuel resources?
So both will continue to be required. So every year, ExxonMobil releases an energy outlook, and that basically studies current trends in population growth, emissions, and energy consumption. So the 2019 energy outlook indicated that in a 15-year period, which in that study was 2015 to 2030, population is expected to increase by 1 billion people. In addition to that, the middle class is expected to increase from about 3 billion to over 5 billion people in that same time frame, which is an equivalent.
Huge.
Amazing. Yes, which is an equivalent of about 5 people every second entering the middle class. So
wow. Okay.
Even considering efficiencies, trends are indicating that we'll need a 20% increase in energy demand over that time period. So since 2000, ExxonMobil has invested approximately $10 billion in projects to research, develop, and deploy lower emission energy solutions. The company continues to expand collaborative efforts and it partners with more than 80 universities, 5 energy centers, and multiple private sector partners around the world to explore next generation energy technologies.
Yeah, it seems like because of its size and certainly its cash flow, ExxonMobil is pretty uniquely positioned to be able to invest in pretty much anything green technology related. Let's talk about a new project that you have going, Stacey. You've recently started writing a travel blog. What on earth prompted you to do that?
So writing is something that I've always loved to do. It started when I first opened the first page of my first journal when I was very young. I'm married with 2 young children. I have a busy corporate career and all that goes with it. But, you know, last year I attended a personal mastery academy. It was a weekend workshop by Robin Sharma. And I really got into some great transformative teaching there and a wonderful community, in addition to that Thunderbird community that I've always been a part of. And what I realized is, you know, the opportunity to really rediscover those talents and those dreams that I really want to pursue. So for many of us, COVID-19 has simplified our lives by removing a lot of running around and complexity that we used to have.
Absolutely.
And yeah. I found that for myself as well. So I think as humans, we have the choice to either focus on all the things that we don't get to do right now, or we can focus on rebooting some aspects of ourselves that may need an upgrade. And so for me, that's included going back into that treasure trove of travel experiences that, you know, I've had the opportunity to take and to be able to write about them and to be able to relate them to the life lessons that I've gained along the way.
Yeah, I think the COVID crisis has given us an opportunity to reevaluate priorities. And certainly it's one of the reasons that Euro Digital Partners decided to revamp their marketing course. Do you see a tie up between your business experience and your hobby or love for travel?
Absolutely. So I've been all over the world on business travel. And I would say that my natural passion that I have about learning about other cultures and languages has really helped me to build stronger business partnerships.
Sure.
For example, I always like to try to learn at least some kind of introductory greeting in the local language when I kick off a presentation in another country. And it's just so incredible to see the faces in the audience light up when they see that, and it really sets things off on a positive tone.
Yeah, and I'm wondering conversely, what about travel has made your business experience better?
I have always enjoyed being able to travel. And so it's given me an opportunity to also build in some vacations within the travel that I've done and to be able to just have a rich experience to be able to learn about other cultures. And also gives me something more to write about as well, because I've written about a number of my business travel experiences as well as my personal ones.
Yeah, it seems that there's something very humanistic about travel. I'm wondering, how do we as humans use travel to build bridges? Because, of course, we're always looking to build bridges in our business lives for those of us who are in business.
So travel can always give us a new perspective. You know, it can tend to allow us to be able to get to know other people that we wouldn't normally. Certainly going on local tours is something that I highly recommend if you can do it, because it gives you a chance to have a little bit more of an intimate experience. In addition to that, something that I always like to do is to research a little bit about the country in advance. What are the culture? What is the culture? What are some of the customs, even some of the history? What I see that sometimes we do is we treat travel like yet another one of our checklists, right? I want to go here, here, here. And then we have these very full days.
Yep.
Right? That are not that much different, right, than what we have at home with our busy lives.
Right. And so travel ends up being as stressful as everyday life.
Absolutely. So that's something that, you know, we really need to have the right mindset to be able to see it as an experience that allows us to be open to the wide, wide world, if you will, and not in a narrow lens of a camera.
I gather that you have the impression that travel can improve work-life balance, no? At least for those who can afford it.
Yes, but again, it all depends on your mindset. You know, if you bring your to-do list with you and you don't let yourself relax, then you just won't have that experience. It's good to approach travel with kind of a childlike wonder. You know, it's something that really makes things very rich. In addition to that, something I really enjoy doing is to be able to get up early in the morning and kind of see what life is like. So for example, I remember one time when I was in Tibet, I was amazing to see people, you know, opening up their shops at the marketplace and just having a kind of a window into their lives that way. Or another time earlier this year, I went to Cartagena, Colombia with my family, and I was out on the beach at sunrise. And I was able to see a group of fishermen bring in their nets full of fish from the morning catch in probably the same way they had done for hundreds, if not a thousand years. And so sometimes, you know, we get very disconnected from nature in our normal lives, in our busy lives. So something like that really gave me a fresh perspective that I was able to then take with me as I went back into the workplace.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's, some perspective that maybe all Americans need. In fact, I saw in 1990 that only 4% of Americans had passports, but a few years ago, that had increased dramatically to something like 42%. It seems like a great triumph, but then I saw the numbers from Canada that showed 66% of citizens holding passports, and England and Wales had 76%. America always wants to be number one, but whatever power the American passport had before the pandemic seems to be unexploited. I'm wondering, how do we get Americans more engaged internationally? How do we get them traveling and living abroad?
So prior to September 11th, U.S. travelers could go to countries like Canada and Mexico without a passport. So what I did read is that when that policy changed, some 20 million more people got a passport just 3 years thereafter. So I would say there's increases, but there's other factors. In addition to that, though, you know, lower prices for travel like the internet and also the cruise ship industry. And then in addition to that, we do see a shifting demographic. So amongst millennials, we do see that they're, you know, typically favoring experience over material things. So we do see an increase in travel, but what I would say, and this is really what my travel writing is about, is that it's one thing to travel, but it's another thing to really let it teach you about another culture, and also to shine kind of like a mirror on your own self so that you understand your own culture better as well. And so that's really what I talk about in my travel writing is I want to take people on a journey,
right?
Whether it's one that they actually take later on with the travel advice I give, or if they just read my story and live vicariously through that experience that I impart, because I want people to be open to a new perspective and I want to shift the lens through which they see the world and allow them to see it in a new way through travel.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I hope everybody in America reads your blog. Okay, now, Stacy, where can we find you online?
So check out travelislight.com and you'll find my website and my travel stories and look forward to hearing from you.
Travelislight.com. I think we'll leave it there. Stacy Abella, thanks so much for your time. I wish you all the best. Listeners, that will do it for another edition of the Euro Digital Partners Insights podcast. Find our articles on the web at eurodigitalpartners.com/insights. And to comment or suggest guests and topics for future episodes, email us at info@eurodigitalpartners.com. Be sure to like Euro Digital Partners on Facebook and follow EDP on Twitter. We're there at EUDigitalP. Finally, please leave a 5-star review for us on iTunes and wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. Lastly, be sure to head over to beatyourcompetitiononline.com to get enrolled in the best and most practical digital marketing course on the internet. So that's it. Thanks again for subscribing. I'm Sean Patterson with Stacy Abella. Bye-bye.